It's astounding. Time is fleeting.
You're listening to the show that talks about stuff the others can't, don't, or won't. The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250.
But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Man, I remember at the Major Mac Hotel in Richmond Hill, Ontario. It was a theater just for this movie for
really?
Like a long time. Because you had to have a theater just for this movie because of the destruction that happened during this movie. I mean, how, you know, you'd spend hours picking up toast.
Yes, and try to dry off the chairs from the squirt guns.
It was
and
unbelievable. Listen, folks, thanks for tuning in. You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca and right here on Joy 1250 in Southern Ontario. Our next guest is a guy I've had a lot of admiration for. He's a smooth cat. He's candidate smooth cat. Richard, I just call you a smooth cat?
It's the first time I've ever been called a smooth cat. I'll take it. I like that. But
you are
unusual, I'm not going to lie.
Okay, well, there we go. Canada's premier film critic, as far as I'm concerned, and is the author of a book called Raising Hell, Ken Russell and the Unmaking of the Devils. Before we get into the whole, Ken Russell stuff, I want you to look down at your feet right now, if you don't mind. Can you do that, Richard?
I'm doing that right now.
Paul Smith or not?
Today, Duchamp. I have a fetish for socks, and I like Paul Smith socks a lot, but today I'm wearing Duchamp socks. Yeah, you know.
Right. Well,
they're polka dotty. You're fun and polka dotty.
Nice. Well done. Well done.
You
didn't disappoint. The only problem I really have with you, as I said, you're a smooth cat. You've got the sock thing happening, the hair thing happening. You've got the great broadcasting voice. You know what you're talking about. You have this nice way of this nice Canadian thing about you, and yet you're a straight shooter. So I don't know how you pull that off. But the only thing I take issue with, Richard, is that you don't like going to the cottage.
I don't. I'm not a cottage person. Have I been really public about this? I hope. I'm not a cottage person. I'm a city person. I like. We took a holiday a couple of weeks ago, and instead of going up north or getting, I live in Toronto. Instead of getting outside of the city, we went to New York. So my idea of getting away is going to an even bigger city and enjoying myself and relaxing.
Nice. Well, he's a very forgiving man. He's very gracious man. Richard Krause on the phone with us. He is so forgiving that two of the things that he is most tolerant of is drunkenness and ego. So he hangs out with Michael Corrin a lot.
I know that you and Michael are friends.
Yes. He spoke quite highly of you. He really did. And when Michael speaks highly of someone, they have got to be very bloody angelic, is what I'm saying. So.
No, Michael's a good guy. We don't always see eye to eye on things, but part of the pleasure of spending time in Michael's company is that you can have, if nothing else, a spirited conversation at the drop of a hat with the guy.
For sure. Well, okay, let's get into this this book about this movie. This book is based on the Devils of Loudon, I think is how you pronounce it, a book by Huxley.
Yeah, Aldous Huxley. I mean, it's based on true events that happened in a place called Loudon, France, in 1634. And it was essentially a power struggle between three very different people. You had Cardinal Richelieu, who was trying to unite all of France as a Roman Catholic nation. You have a priest of a small walled city called Loudon named Father Grandier, played by Oliver Reed in the movie. And then you have a nun, Sister Jeanne of the Angels, who is played by Vanessa Redgrave in the film. And she is very likely mentally ill. She is disfigured. She has a large humpback, and was very likely put in the convent as a young girl not because her parents were religious or that she was particularly pious, but because her parents didn't know how to look after her and thought, well, we have nothing else to do but give her up. And so it's a power struggle between those three people that actually happened 400 years ago.
Okay, but the sort of the set of this movie, 17th century France, was the set and the design and the flavor and the style and the cinematography and the whole deal, was that kind of more based on that play by John Whiting?
It is. I mean, the screenplay and the tone of the movie, it comes a great deal from the Whiting play, which played on Broadway, and Jason Robards and Bancroft were the stars of the show when it was on Broadway. And the themes, I think, and the overarching ideas came from Aldous Huxley. So it's a mix and match of the two. But stylistically, for sure, the play, I think, influenced the screenplay more than the book.
Okay. And to give a people an idea of the, I guess, overall gist, before we get into the weirdness, let's talk about demonic possessions and exorcisms and a priest who is executed for heresy. Before we get into weirdness, let's talk about that.
Well, you have, because of the power struggle that I described earlier, Cardinal Richelieu desperately wanted to take over this walled city, but he was up against a very powerful priest. And this priest wasn't perfect. He was, I guess, what Graham Greene would have called a whiskey priest. He was a bit of a womanizer. He drank. He was pious, but he didn't follow the word of the Bible exactly.
Right.
And so he was still a very powerful man. So to get him out of there, Richelieu and his men, one of whom, historically, there were a number of people involved here in the film. They've combined a lot of characters just for ease of storytelling, I think. So you've got people that are sent to the walled city of Loudun to play up this whole dynamic between a nun who is in love with a priest that she's never met, and she's making outlandish claims against him. And then there start happening instances of demonic possession. Pardon me. It's a complicated story, and it's one that's sort of hard to sum up in a very few words, but that's essentially the gist. And charges of heresy were brought against this priest because they wanted him deposed.
Okay. You've seen it more than 200 times?
Oh, yeah, probably. I mean, you know, it's not sitting down and watching it start to finish 200 times, but it's watching it, watching scenes over and over again, watching half an hour of it, writing about it, going back. So, yeah, I would say probably easily 200 times.
Right. So I guess my next question is, have you reviewed any other movies?
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I mean, because seriously, if you're going to sit there and watch a movie 200 times, you must have a bit of fascination. You must have a bit of a fixation, I might say, with this. And is it with this movie? Is it with the man behind the movie? I mean, I know you had the opportunity, a timely opportunity, to interview Ken Russell less than a year before his death, much in the same way that I was able to interview James Brown less than a year before his death.
That's cool.
Yeah, but I mean, Ken, like, you must have been gobsmacked sitting there with Ken Russell.
I was. I've loved and admired his films for years. I mean, ever since I was a kid. And for me, he was one of the great British filmmakers who, in recent years, has been forgotten about. And part of the reason that I wanted to write this book, I do think that the movie is a masterpiece. It's a very difficult movie. It's a very challenging movie, and it's not for everybody. And I understand that. But I wanted to tell the story of the movie because it works on a number of different levels. I wanted to let people know, again, remind them what a great filmmaker Ken Russell was. I wanted to remind people about a movie that was censored and banned and treated really, really poorly for 40 years and continues to be. The studio that owns it still won't release the entire movie. And it's interesting to me on that level. So it wasn't just, the book isn't just specifically about the movie. It's about a great filmmaker making a great movie and then what happened afterwards.
Yeah, okay, well, let's talk about what happened afterwards, because that really is the crux of this whole thing. By the way, we're on the phone with Richard Krause. He is Canada's premier film critic. He is also the author of this book we're chatting about, Raising Hell, Ken Russell in the Unmaking of the Devils. I'm just trying to figure out a way to get the point across to our listeners on this Jesus station.
Yeah.
How perverted the movie is. And when I use the word perverted, I, you know, as that came out of my mouth, Richard, I thought, oh, geez, that sounds like a, you know, that's next thing you know, you're going to think I'm like Charles McVitie.
No, I understand what you mean. And, you know, as I said, this is a very challenging movie, and it was made by a man who was a devout Catholic, who was someone who was you know, very interested in studying and learning about his religion and his faith. He was a spiritual man. And, you know, like all people who are thinkers, and he certainly was, he was a very erudite, interesting man, he questioned things. As an artist, he looked at his faith and looked at his spirituality, and when he had questions and, you know, thoughts, he would talk to his priest, certainly. But, you know, it was inevitable that it was going to come out in his art. And his art is extreme. And so the scenes that we've never seen, that have been cut away, and I've actually seen them, and I write about them in the book, are scenes that are based in truth. These things actually happened, where nuns were whipped into this frenzy in this church, and they did kind of erotic things in front of groups of onlookers because they were whipped into this frenzy. And there's any number of reasons. Demonic possession was blamed at the time. Later on, it was thought that perhaps the wheat that had been harvested in the nearby was stored improperly, and that some kind of weird mold grew on it that was sort of akin to LSD. And when they made bread or whatever it was that they made with it, that's what might have caused these mass hysterical episodes that Ken Russell visualizes in the film.
Okay, I'm sitting in the studio with Kevin Miller, who is the writer, director, and producer of a little flick that's out these days, taking the world by storm, called Hellbound. And Kevin, this is Richard Krause. Hi, Richard Krause. Kevin.
Hey, Kevin. How are you?
Good. Good to meet you.
When you're talking about the wacky mold in the grain or whatever, Kevin, you're shaking your head. Now, you're from Vancouver. Do you guys eat that stuff regularly out there?
Oh, we smoke it out there, actually.
Yeah.
But
no, what happened?
No, my ears perked up. I'm actually from Saskatchewan originally, but as part of the research for Hellbound, we went and did some interviews at the Salem Witch Museum on the east coast of the U.S.
Oh, right.
And
that's
one of the potential explanations for the hysteria that swept the young girls in the town was eating this wheat that had a mold on it, and it essentially was like like LSD. It was a hallucinogenic.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
It's an interesting theory, and it's one that's been put forth to describe or to, you know, help people understand what happened in Loudon in 1634.
All right, Richard. Where are you at with all this God stuff, man? I mean, I know you're interested in this movie and have written this book, and the guy behind the movie is the Catholic stuff. And, I mean, you know, you grew up in Canada, so there must have been some sort of God stuff in your background. Are you totally neutral in all this God stuff?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say I'm neutral. And the book, I mean, I have to be quite clear. I don't think that the movie is sacrilegious or blasphemous. I think that, you know, Ken Russell, I think because of his devout nature in his life, and I think that because he is describing events from history, I think he has cut a lot of latitude to tell the story and tell it properly. So I have to be clear. I don't think that this is a movie that is about outrage for outrage's sake, or that, is blasphemous. Now, it is shocking in some ways, and it is challenging. So, you know, there's that. As for me, I'm not Roman Catholic. I studied a great deal to help me understand the things that I was writing about more, and I spoke to a lot of people. I did hundreds of interviews for this book. It took years, and I did hundreds of interviews with people to help me understand it. And, you know, that helped me in a great deal. Just think about, you know, my own kind of spirituality and how I think about things.
Interesting. Well, I wonder if Michael Korn would read it. You know, do you think Christians would be offended by it? I know Michael is offended by nothing, but would Christians generally, do you think Jesus people would be offended by it?
I don't think people would be offended by the book, no. I mean, I have written a book that is about, a challenging piece of art. And, you know, the book and the movie aren't for everybody, but, I mean, you know, what book or movie is. So, yeah. You know, that's a different thing. I don't think that they would be offended by it. I would hope not. It certainly wasn't my intention.
All right. Well, final question for you, Richard. We'll let you go. We've got to get to our witch. It's our Halloween special, and we've got to call our witch. Should shock, although based on reality, ever be edited? Are there any lines? Are there any lines in the production and the creativity of films that you think should not be crossed? As a film critic, what do you think?
I think so. I mean, I think that there certainly are lines, and I mean, I think in any kind of civilized society that there are lines. But I also think that before those lines are drawn, that we should have a great deal of discussion about them, and that knee-jerk reactions are never good. Ken Russell believes in censorship. He's one of the filmmakers who suffered at the hands of censors in Britain more than almost anybody else, and yet he still believed in a certain amount of censorship. I don't know that I would go so far as to say censorship, because I don't really like that word much, but I do think that things have to be discussed and openly discussed before they're taken away from us.
RichardKraus.ca, he reviews films so you don't have to. He is the regular film critic for CTV's Canada AM and 24-hour news source CTV's news channel. And by the way, I absolutely always enjoy it when you are on with John Moore in the morning. With
what's, good, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you guys just have a great little chemistry together. So well done, Richard. And this book is a fascinating read, folks. So go out and grab it. Great to chat with you.
Thank you, Drew.
Thank you, Richard. Yeah, bye-bye. Richard Krause on the Drew Marshall Show, Canada's premier film critic and author of Raising Hell, Ken Russell and the Unmaking of the Devils. RichardKraus.ca. Check him out.
I want to tell you, this is the first time I've ever listened to your show. It was just totally by accident. So pleased to hear the latter part of the show. The earlier part of the show, I guess, worried me.
10 years ago, after 5 years of pastoring in Australia, Drew Marshall moved back to Canada and, with absolutely zero broadcasting experience, walked into the studios of Joy 1250 and pitched the idea of hosting a talk show that was different. Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is now listened to by over 100,000 people around southern Ontario and thousands more by Canadians coast to coast. On September 15, 2012, The Drew Marshall Show will start season 10. And as a thank you for putting up with Drew for 10 years, we've decided to cut all advertising costs by 10%. Doesn't matter which plan you're interested in. 1250 specials, 10% off. One-day advertising package, 10% off. Our summer holiday special, 10% off. Or even our 15-week advertising package is now 10% off. To sign up for one of our 10-year anniversary advertising specials, contact us today at drewmarshall.ca.